Chapter 27. Calibrations. Higo Damask didn't simply keep a penthouse on Coruscant. He owned an entire building. While it wasn't as grand as 500 Republica, Kaldani Spires was the Galactic Center's most desired address outside the Senate District. Towering over Monument Plaza, the stately building was as fine an example of Hasinan period architecture as could be found on world. And from its uppermost suites, residents could see from the peaks of the Minari Mountains clear to the western sea. Coruscant's only instances of naked rock and surface water. A neighborhood for neither politicians nor the newly arrived, the district catered to solid old money citizenry. Financiers, corporate chiefs, industrialists, and bankers. Damask's residence took up the whole of the Kaldani summit. A pair of sun guards rode with Palpatine in the private turbolift, only to surrender him to another pair stationed in the penthouse's light-filled atrium. But it was the droid 114D that escorted him into Damask's study, which was darkened by tall, brocade curtains and filled with masterpieces of galactic art. The masked Mune himself rose from a plush armchair to greet Palpatine as he was shown into the room. "Master," Sidious said, interlocking his hands in front of him and bowing his head. Plagueis lowered his head in a gesture of mutual respect.
"Welcome, Darth Sidious. It's good to see you."
As the room was the opposite of the one he had often confined himself to on sojourn, Plagueis no longer looked like the wide-eyed mystic he had seemed only months earlier. Except for having to wear the breathing device, he struck Palpatine as a slightly older version of the Mune who had visited him on Naboo so many decades before. The two Sith moved to a sunken area of the room and sat across from each other. Plagueis filled two glasses with clear wine and passed one to his apprentice. He made the act of imbibing through his nasal passages seem almost routine.
"After sojourn, I find it somewhat dislocating to be back in the greater world."
"Master, I'm sorry I wasn't the first to warn you of the attack," Sidious said. "I didn't think Varuna had the courage to carry out his veiled threats. Perhaps I nudged him too far." A long moment of silence passed between them.
"What you did and didn't do is immaterial,"
Plagueis said at last.
"Coming when it did, at almost precisely the same time the members of the Trade Federation Directorate were meeting their fates, the attack was the work of the Force, substantiating our ambitions especially."
He took more wine and set the glass down.
"I never would have had the heart to destroy Sojourn, though it needed to be done. And so the Force saw to it. The incident reminds us of the need to be prepared for sudden eventualities, whether harmonious or inimical to our plans, and compliant to circumstance."
"And now we are justified in striking back," Sidious said.
"We no longer need to justify our actions to anyone. But bear in mind what I told you long ago. By killing one, we can frighten many."
Sidious nodded. "We owe Jabba a great debt."
"I spoke briefly with Varuna from the Hutt's ship."
Sidious grinned slightly. "I suspected as much when I learned just prior to the summit that he had abdicated, and that Padme Nabere had been appointed queen. He has apparently hidden himself away in Naboo's western reaches."
"That's not hiding," Plagueis said with a note of menace. "All went well on Eriadu?"
"Better than expected, what with the Jedi running in circles and convinced that Valorum was the target. I savored their dismayed incredulity on learning that the droids had emptied their weapons on the members of the Directorate. In the end, the leaders of the Nebula Front died as well, and our friend Willef Tarkin, is making matters difficult for Republic investigators. Soon, the Erodium stolen from the Trade Federation freighter will be discovered to have been invested in Valorum shipping and transport, making it appear that the Supreme Chancellor's push for taxation was motivated by greed and illegal enrichment. He is brought down. Even his power to deploy the Jedi or judicials will be stripped from him. Plagueis' eyes narrowed.
And Gunray?
Precisely where we want him. Leader by default of the Trade Federation, and busy acquiring the droid weapons the Senate will sanction. Where the Nymoirian should be grateful to Senator Palpatine for proposing the summit, they are instead furious. Everything is in place for launching the blockade.
Almost everything. First, there is the matter of our revenge.
Shall I task Maul to pay Varuna a visit? Plagueis shook his head.
I intend to see to him personally. Is the Zablak, Maul as you call him, capable of dealing with Alexei Garin and his Vigos?
He will not fail us. Plagueis considered that for a moment, then said,
The infiltrator sits under guard at West Champion Starport. Have Pestage transport the ship to the Limerge building so that you can present it as a gift to your apprentice. I will provide you with information about Garin's current whereabouts.
That leaves only the hut and Bando Gora.
I have promised Gardula to Jabba. As for the Bando Gora...
Plagueis rose from the chair, walked to the curtained windows, and peered outside.
There is a rumor worth pursuing that Master Dooku's former apprentice, Komare Vosa, is not only alive, but the cult's newest leader, and eager to avenge herself on the Jedi Order for having abandoned her and her comrades on Balthazar.
Vosa turning to the dark side, Sidious said, as if thinking aloud. Dooku trained her better than he knows.
Yes, but she is a fallen Jedi, not a Sith. We will exact revenge on the Bando Gora at another time.
Sidious stood up and joined Plagueis at the parted curtains. I will inform Viceroy Gunray to prepare his armed ships for relocation to the Naboo system. In a mid-level hangar in the Limerge building, Sidious watched Maul stow the last of his gear and hand-built contrivances aboard the infiltrator, which, like the Zebrak speeder bike, now had a name. Scimitar. Closing a cargo hatch in the forward portion of the hull, Maul stepped back to admire the ship, then swung to Sidious and genuflected.
I am not deserving of such a gift, Master.
Sidious glowered. If you feel that way, then prove your worth to yourself and me by succeeding in your mission.
I pledge as much.
Sidious watched him carefully. We need to dismantle the Black Sun criminal cartel. The Vigos had strong ties to some members of the Trade Federation Directorate, and they suspect there was foul play at Eriadu. Right now, the Nymoidians are in their sights, and we can't risk having them interfere with our plans. He made no mention of Black Sun's complicity in the attack on Sojourn. Maul nodded.
I understand, Master.
Sidious made a beckoning motion with his hands. Rise and listen carefully, Darth Maul. Time doesn't permit hunting down Alexei Garin and his Vigos one by one. Therefore, make Boss Darnada your first victim. You will find the Dug at his deep space reclamation station. Then jump your ship to Mon Calamari and kill the Vigo called Morn. By then, word of your actions will have reached Garin, and he will likely summon the remaining 7 Vigos to his fortress on Raltir, Nariis, Mother Deen, Nepchung, and the rest. You are to contact me when you have verified that they are all in one place. He glanced at the scimitar. It will be an opportunity to put your probe droids to the test. A look of eagerness took shape on Maul's fearsome face. Sidious walked to him and placed his hands atop Maul's shoulders.
You will be facing many skilled opponents, my apprentice. Darnada's Twi'lek bodyguard, Sinya, Garen himself, who has some strength in the Force, and Garen's chief protector, Megella, who is a Night Sister and will immediately identify you as a Night Brother.
Maul scowled.
A Night Sister is not a Sith.
Sidious's eyes narrowed. As you well know. But as on Dorvala, take care to leave no witnesses. Maul showed his sharpened teeth.
It shall be done, and Black Sun will cease to be an impediment.
Sidious nodded. Then be on your way, Darth Maul. The dark side is with you. Maul bowed his head and hurried up the rear boarding ramp into the cockpit module. Sidious lingered to watch the ship rise and edge out of the hangar, becoming invisible as it flew over the works. Through the dark side, he continued to track the scimitar as it angled north toward the Jedi Temple rather than south and away from the Senate District. Sidious recalled the voyages he had taken 10 years earlier to watch Maul fight in gladiatorial matches on Orsus and nearby worlds. Driven to win against all odds, unaffected by pain, daring, and terrifying. An up-and-coming contender at 10 years of age and a champion at 12. Under the markings that masked his face, sleeved his arms, and twisted around his legs and torso, the scars of those battles to the death. But this one will not be content until he has killed a Jedi Master, Sidious thought, assuming that pride didn't defeat him first. Leaving the hangar space, Sidious made his way to the holo projector in the building's only refurbished room. What would become of Maul once Palpatine and Damask assumed control of the Republic, he asked himself. As a secret weapon, he would continue to be useful. But could he ever be eased into public life? How would he react to learning that his master answered to a master? With his feet planted on the transmission grid, Sidious sat in the chair that was positioned for the holoprojector's cams, adjusted the controls built into one of the armrests, and raised the cowl of his cloak over his head. For 20 years, he had enjoyed living a double life, but now he felt an urge to be known for who he was, and feared for how powerful he could be. He directed his thoughts forward in time, yearning for a clear vision of the future, but none came. Did the dark side blind even its most devoted advocates to what was looming on the horizon? Plagueis had said that they needed to be prepared for sudden eventualities. Was he withholding knowledge of events he knew were imminent? The Mune's renewed vigor had taken Sidious by surprise. The mere fact that he had escaped the devastation on Sojourn made him seem almost omnipotent. Though even when ensconced in his affluent citadel in the Minari district, he had yet to relax his vigilance or submit to sleep. Repressing a sudden feeling of envy, Sidious began to wonder if, blinded by the dark side, he had actually failed to divine Varuna's attack on Sojourn, or if he hadn't allowed himself to divine it. A touch of his forefinger activated the holo projector, and moments later, a half-sized eidolon of Newt Gunray resolved in midair. As in recent transmissions, the Viceroy's Nymordian underlings, Chief Litigator Roon Hako, Captain Dalte Dauphine, and Deputy Viceroy Hath Monchar were hovering in the background.
Lord Sidious,
Gunray said with a slight stammer in his voice.
We have been waiting.
Do you imagine yourself centermost in my thoughts that I should neglect other matters to communicate with you precisely on time?
No, Lord Sidious. I simply meant to say...
Are you gratified with your new position, Viceroy?
very gratified, though I appear to have inherited control of the Trade Federation at a time of crisis.
Save your whining for another occasion, Viceroy, for matters are about to become worse. Gunray's nictitating membrane spasmed.
Worse? How can that be?
The Republic Senate is on the verge of passing legislation that will enact taxation of the free trade zones.
This is an outrage.
To be sure. But I warned you that this was coming. Supreme Chancellor Valorum has lost all credibility. And after what occurred at Eriadu, the Senate is determined to weaken the Trade Federation further. King Varuna may have been able to stall the Senate, but he has abdicated. And young Queen Amidala and Naboo's senator are leading the call for taxation. With the Senate preoccupied, the moment is right for you to begin assembling a fleet of armed freighters to impose a blockade.
A blockade? Of what system, Lord Sidious?
I will inform you in due time. When Gunray didn't respond, Sidious said, What is it, Viceroy? Across the vastness of space, I can perceive the reeling of your feeble brain.
Forgive me, Lord Sidious, but as my advisors have pointed out, the redistribution of our vessels carries with it considerable financial risk. To begin with, there is the cost of fuel. Then, with so many ships allocated to an embargo, a disruption in trade in the mid and outer rims for however long the blockade is maintained. Finally, there is no telling how our investors might react to the news.
Sidious leaned forward. So this is about credits, is it? Gunray's muzzle twitched.
We are, after all, Lord Sidious, a commercial enterprise, not a navy.
Sidious didn't respond immediately. When he did, his voice oozed disgust. Even after all I have engineered on your behalf, you fail to grasp that by allying with me, you are investing in the future. He flicked his right hand in dismissal. But no matter. Does it not occur to you that your most valued investors are in a position to reap great profits from your knowledge of what is about to happen? Would they not profit from learning that the Zaichar, the Genosians, and other unionized insectoids have turned their pincers and claws to the manufacture of weapons? Might you not balance your precious budget by gaining from other shipping companies what revenue the Trade Federation risks losing? Gunray looked uncertain.
We feared that such actions might undermine the element of surprise, Lord Sidious.
That is the reason for swift action. Gunray nodded.
I will order a fleet assembled.
Sidious sat back in the chair. Good. Remember, Viceroy, that what I have delivered to you, I can just as easily take away. Sidious ended the transmission and lowered the cowl. Was this a vision of the future? A life of micromanaging the affairs of incompetent beings, while he and Plagueis set in motion the final phases of the grand plan? Or was there perhaps some other way for him to govern, in malevolent satisfaction? Even without the drenching rain, the ground would have been soft under Plagueis' booted feet, composed as it was of eons of decayed organic matter. Water dripped from the transpirator mask and the raised hood of his cloak and splashed in the puddles that had formed beneath him. The castle that had once belonged to Varuna's ancestor, the Earl of Vis, crowned a desolate hill, with no road leading to it, and a view in all directions of the rolling, sodden, treeless terrain. Through night-vision electrobinoculars, Plagueis studied the scanners that studied the castle's walls and the disposition of the guards, some of whom were keeping dry in the shelter of an arch that crowned an ornate portcullis. Parked near the entrance was a veritable fleet of landspeeders,
and off to one side, centered in a circular landing zone, sat a space yacht whose gleaming hull even the torrent couldn't dull. Illumination arrays glowed behind drifting curtains of rain. Following a deep, fast-moving rivulet, Plagueis descended the hill he had climbed to where he had set his own starship down among a riot of drooping wildflowers and falconberries. 114D was waiting at the foot of the boarding ramp, raindrops pinging on its alloy shell.
"The scanners may have picked up the ship," Plagueis said.
"Given that all my countermeasures were enabled, that seems unlikely, Magister."
"They've flooded the area with light."
"As any vigilant being might on a night such as this."
"A night fit for neither mune nor shark."
The droid's photoreceptors tightened their focus on him.
"The reference escapes my databank."
"Seal the ship and remain in the cockpit. If I calm you, reposition the ship above the castle's southwest corner and keep the boarding ramp extended."
"Are you anticipating resistance, Magister?"
"Merely anticipating, 4D.
"I understand. I would do the same."
"That's comforting to know."
Plagueis fixed the lightsaber hilt to his hip and set out at a fast clip, all but outracing the rain. If the scanners and motion detectors were as precise as they appeared to be, they would find him, though his speed might cause whoever was monitoring the security devices to mistake him for one of the wild, bushy-tailed quadrupeds that inhabited the landscape. He paused at the nebulous edge of the illuminated area to confirm his bearings, then made straight for the castle's 10-meter-high southern wall and leapt to the top without breaking stride. Just as quickly and as effortlessly, he dropped into the garden below and sprinted into the shadows cast by an ornamental shrub trimmed to resemble some whimsical beast. Plagueis reasoned that security would be lax inside the manse, but that Varuna's wing of rooms would be outfitted with redundant monitoring devices and perhaps pressure-sensitive floors. That he hadn't been able to procure an interior plan of the castle was a testament to the self-exiled regent's hypervigilance. Plagueis moved to a stained-glass window just as two humans were hurrying through a hallway beyond. With rain overflowing a gutter high overhead, he felt as if he were standing behind a waterfall.
"Check on him, and report back to me," the female was saying.
Plagueis recognized the voice of Security Chief Magneta. Sticking close to the outer wall, he paralleled the movement of Magneta's subordinate to the end of the hallway, then through a right-angled turn into a broader hall that led to a control room tucked beneath the sweep of a grand staircase. Plagueis sharpened his auditory senses to hear Magneta's man ask after Varuna, and a human female reply,
"Sleeping like a baby."
"Good for him, while the rest of us drown."
"If you're so miserable, Charlie," the woman said, "you should consider returning to Theed."
"I'm thinking about it."
"Just don't expect me to follow you."
Plagueis stepped away from the wall to glance at the upper story windows, all of which were dark, save for an arched opening near the end of the wall. Crouching, he maneuvered through bushes under a series of wide windows, then began to scale the wall, fastened to it like an insect. The tall and narrow target opening turned out to be a fixed pane of thick glass, the source of the light, a pair of photonic sconces that flanked a set of elaborately carved wooden double doors. Peering through the glass, he flicked his fingers at a security cam mounted high on the inner wall and aimed at the doorway, dazzling the mechanism and freezing the image of an unoccupied antechamber. Then, placing his left hand at the center of the glass, he called on the force, pushing inward on the pane until it broke free of the adhesive weather seal that held it in place. Telekinetically, he manipulated the intact pane to rest atop a table snugged to the opposite wall of the antechamber and slipped through the opening. For a long moment, he remained on the inner windowsill, waiting for his cloak and boots to dry. and studying the patterned floor and double doors for evidence of additional security devices. Satisfied that the stunned cam was all there was, he planted his feet on the floor and walked to the doors, using the force to trick them into opening just enough to accommodate his passing between them. The only light in Varuna's enormous bedroom came from a cam similar to the one in the antechamber and just as easily foiled. The former king himself was sleeping on his back under shimmer silk sheets in the center of a canopied bed large enough to fit half a dozen humans of average size. Plagueis disabled a bedside panel of security alarms, moved an antique chair to the foot of the bed, and switched on a table lamp that supplied dim, yellowish light. Then, sitting down, he roused Varuna from sleep. The old man woke with a start, blinking in response to the light, then propping himself up against a gathering of pillows to scan the room. His eyes widened in thunderstruck surprise when they found Plagueis seated at the edge of the light's reach.
Who?
Hego Damask, Your Majesty. Beneath this mask my former enemies may as well have fashioned for me.
Since Varuna's eyes couldn't open any wider, his jaw dropped, and he flailed for the security control panels, slamming his hand down on the buttons when they didn't respond.
I've rendered them inoperative, Plagueis explained. Along with the security cams, just so that you and I could converse without being interrupted.
Varuna swallowed and found his voice.
How did you get past my guards, Damask?
We'll come to that in a moment.
Magna...
Varuna attempted to scream until his voice went mute and he clutched at his throat.
There will be none of that, Plagueis warned.
What do you want with me, Damask?
Varuna asked when he could, breathing hard.
Closure.
Varuna stared at him in disbelief.
You got what you wanted. Isn't it enough that I abdicated?
Your abdication would have been enough had you not tried first to have me killed.
Varuna gritted his teeth.
Everything I built was in jeopardy of being taken from me. Even the monarchy. You left me no choice.
Plagueis stood and reseated himself on the edge of the bed, like some macabre confessor.
I understand. Faced with a similar choice, I might have done the same. The difference is that I would have succeeded where you failed.
I'll remain here,
Varuna said in a grasping way.
I won't cause you or Palpatine any more trouble.
That's true. Plagueis paused, then said, Perhaps I should have been more honest with you from the start. I delivered the Trade Federation to you. I put Tapelo, then you, on the throne. How did you imagine I came by such power?
Varuna ran a trembling hand over his thinning hair.
You were born the son of a wealthy mune, and transformed that wealth into power.
Plagueis made a sound of disappointment.
Oh, have you not yet learned that the galaxy isn't moved by credits alone?
Varuna gulped and found his voice.
How did you come by such power, Damask?
He asked in a whisper of genuine interest.
I was shown the way to power by a Bith named Rutus Gnome.
I know the name.
Yes. But his true name was Darth Tenebris, and he wore the mantle of the Dark Lord of the Sith. I was, at one time, his apprentice.
Sith?
Varuna said, as if weakened by the very word.
Had you known, would you have allied with me?
Varuna marshaled the strength to shake his head.
Political power is one thing. But what you represent?
Plagueis made his lips a thin line.
I appreciate your honesty, Varuna. Are you beginning to tire of my presence?
Not of you,
Varuna said with eyes half closed. Let me explain what is happening to you, Plagueis said. The cells that make up all living things contain within them organelles known as midichlorians. They are, in addition to being the basis for life, the elements that enable beings like me to perceive and use the Force. As the result of a lifetime of study, I have learned how to manipulate midichlorians, and I have instructed the limited number you possess to return to their source. In plain basic, Varuna, I am killing you.
Varuna's face was losing color, and his breathing had slowed. Bring me back. I can still be of service to you.
But you are, Your Majesty. A celebrated ancient poet once said that every death lessened him, for he considered himself to be a brother to every living being. I, on the other hand, have come to understand that every death I oversee nourishes and empowers me, for I am a true Sith.
No better than an Anzati.
The Brain Eaters. What does better than mean to those of us who have passed beyond notions of good and evil? Are you better than Bon Tapolo? Are you better than Queen Padme Amidala? I am the only one fit to answer the question. Better are those who do my bidding.
Plagueis placed his hand atop Varuna's.
I'll remain with you for a while, as you meld with the Force. But at some point, I will have to leave you at the threshold to continue on your own.
Don't do this, Demas. Please.
I am Darth Plagueis, Varuna, your shepherd.
As life left Varuna's body, the path he and Plagueis followed wound deeper into darkness and absence. Then Plagueis stopped, overcome by a sudden sense that he had already seen and traveled this path. Had he? He wondered as Varuna breathed his last. Or had the Force afforded him a glimpse of the future?